Okay. Good, Regis. For some reason, I thought maybe you couldn't put down the mic. Sometimes the mic gets locked. So I thought when you said take it away, Regina, with the picture of the mic, I thought maybe you wanted me to red dot you or something, but I wanted to be sure. I'm not usually accustomed to taking the mic away from people. Hello, everyone. Happy, happy Sunday. Maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't, that this afternoon there was a minister ordination ceremony. And many people that you know, I'll probably forget somebody when I try to go down the list, but I'll do my best. Regia Joy Green, Lisa Trevino, Nikki Dobson, Linda Snow, Pam, oh shoot, I know Pam's last name, but I can't think of her last name right now. It starts with a W. I can't think of it. And Seth, I can't think of his last name either. I'm so sorry. And me. No, not Pamela Silverman, a different Pamela. Anyway, we were ordained this afternoon. So we had like about an hour and 40 minute ordination ceremony. So that is now official. It is done. And we move on. That's the end of that. That's the end of that. So, what I'm here for now is the 7 steps to awakening. What did I wear? Well, let's see. I am wearing my boyfriend's Harvard sweatshirt, blue jeans, house slippers. My hair is in braids. I do have on earrings, which is rather fancy for me. I don't always wear earrings. But I was on the phone, Christian, so I could have been in my pajamas. It didn't matter what I was wearing. It was a formal ordination ceremony on the phone, in a conference call, because everybody was all over the United States. So, but yeah, I did have on earrings. That's why I was dressed up. Let's see. Okay, so as I was saying, yeah, I think only in the U.S. Yes. So now I'm here for 7 steps to awakening, and I'm going to begin tonight with number 494. And so what I will do is paste a link to my journal, 494, in the room for anybody who wants to follow along with me. If there is anyone listening on the radio who would like to follow along, go to RDA. Seven, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out. RDA 7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. And once you get to the website, if you look on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see where there's step 1, step 2, step 3. Look under step 2 and find the numbering sequence that will allow you to find your way to number 494. Because that's where we're beginning. And Christian, I was baptized last June in Israel in the Jordan River. Nook Sanchez and Stacy Sully baptized me in the Jordan River. So you know that, okay. Yeah. That was a lot of fun being baptized in the Jordan River. I don't know that I would have chosen to be baptized anyplace else, but being there, it felt very nice. Barb is in the room. Barb was also baptized in the Jordan River. Oh yeah, and Jay was there. He was baptized. How could I forget? Jay was there. He was baptized in the Jordan River that day by Nook and I. So yeah, there are 3 people here that were baptized that day. I think there were 25 people in our group baptized that day, plus 4 other people from some very small country that used to be a part of the USSR. They asked us to baptize them as well. And it was a woman, if I remember, maybe 2 ladies and a girl and a boy. And the boy was probably about 12, maybe 13 years old. But I have never forgotten that boy that we baptized because his face literally was like the face of an angel. I mean, I could almost imagine how John the Baptist felt baptizing Jesus when I was baptizing this boy, because I felt like I was baptizing an angel. You know, I'm sure it's how John the Baptist felt, you know, that he thought Jesus should have baptized him. This boy, you know, just had such an angelic face. And when we baptize people, we ask them, what does this baptism mean to you? We allow people to express what it meant to them. And this boy understood some English, because, of course, he studies English in school. And so when I asked him if he knew English, he said yes. And so I asked him the question, what does this baptism mean to you? But then in order to really speak his heart effectively, he went ahead and spoke in his language. And so I don't know what he said, but I could tell that the baptism was very meaningful to him, very precious to him. It was an honor that day to be able to baptize 29 people, 25 of which were friends that I knew and 4 that I did not know and will not see again. And we're going to Israel again. In fact, I should say this out loud. Dove, are you listening? I will not be here next Sunday or the Sunday after. I'll send Dove an email as well. Okay, because I leave next Sunday morning for Israel. So the next 2 Sundays I will not be here, because I'll be in Israel. I'll be back here. Let's see. Yeah, March 17. I'll be back here March 17. So, all right. Why don't we take a moment of silence, and then we will go ahead and get started on our 7 steps. Amen. all right, so I'm going to start by reading number 494 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. This is a quote that comes from Yoga Vasistha, the Supreme Yoga, and here is the quote. Only when it is realized that there is no creation at all does real self-knowledge arise, which leads to liberation. Such liberation is unending, infinite, and unconditioned. Only when it is realized that there is no creation at all does real self-knowledge arise, which leads to liberation. Such liberation is unending, infinite, and unconditioned. All right, just in case some people entered the room since I posted the link, I'll post it again. And why don't we look at my journal? This, of course, is what I wrote after contemplating the quote that I just read. The primal thought, illusion itself. Now, this, of course, is a continuation of what I was covering last week, but probably everyone in the room, if even if you weren't here, can get up to speed very quickly, because the primal thought would be the tiny mad idea, as in coarse language. The primal thought, illusion itself, results in illusory experience. Illusory experience can change, as change is the nature of experience. But as long as the primal thought is believed, one is not free of illusion. Seeing that the primal thought does not exist is freedom. Now, it's interesting because the seven steps work similar to A Course in Miracles, does not define what the primal thought is. NTI attempted to assist by putting some type of definition on it, and it said that thought was, what if everything were different than it is? And I think I've heard Ken Wapnick also try to assist by saying that the primal thought was something like, what if I was separate from God? Or maybe I've heard people say that Ken says that, so I could be wrong if I got it secondhand. But these ideas shared, what if everything were different than it is, or what if I could be separate from God? These are just ideas that are attempting to be helpful to us in understanding the primal thought. But I think that even if we understand those ideas and those ideas are helpful to us, they don't really fully capture the primal thought. I'm not sure that the primal thought can be fully captured and communicated. So at some level, instead of being concerned about what was the primal thought or what was the tiny mad idea, I think it's much more helpful to realize that the primal thought resulted in apparent change, but that that apparent change was only an appearance, much like a daydream, and that reality itself has never changed. And in fact, all experience that comes out of the primal thought, of course, is also change. And that change can actually be enjoyed, just like we can sit back and enjoy a movie. You know, a movie can have all kinds of things happening in it. We can laugh, we can cry, we can be frightened, we can be relieved. And yet, we can still enjoy the movie. Well, all of experience can also be enjoyed as long as it's not believed in. So the problem doesn't seem to be because of the primal thought or even because of the experience that comes out of the primal thought. The problem seems to be in believing that the primal thought and everything that comes from it is reality. It's the believing. If we see that the primal thought does not actually exist because the change remains changeless, you can't really say something exists unless it has an effect. You know, and in the world, in the illusion, you know, things do have an effect. You know, if I pick up this tape canister and drop it, the effect is that noise you just heard. So it makes it appear that the world is real because there's a cause and effect. But when you become aware of the changeless nature, and you begin to stay with, observe the changeless nature, you start to notice the changeless nature is never affected by anything. No matter what happens, the changeless nature is never affected. You notice that the body could be sick or well. The changeless nature is the same. The personality could be, you know, like a Republican at one point in lifetime and a Democrat at another point in lifetime, and there's no change in the changeless nature. You start to notice that the world has no effect on the changeless nature. And if it has no effect, then it can't be real. And that realization is freedom. Again, this takes us back to the introduction to A Course in Miracles, right? Nothing real can be threatened, and nothing unreal exists. Therein lies the peace of God. So this is really saying the same thing. The primal thought, which is illusion itself, results in illusory experience, which means experience that's not real, because it has no effect on our true nature. Illusory experience can change, as change is the nature of experience. But as long as the primal thought is believed, one is not free of illusion. Seeing that the primal thought does not exist is freedom, which of course means again seeing that the true nature is not affected is freedom, which again, nothing real is threatened, nothing unreal exists, herein lies the peace of God. It's all the same. So tell you what, if you're in 494 with me, why don't you scroll down and click on number 495A underneath the comment and reply area. And what I am going to do is also post a link in this room for anyone who is new. And hello, Pia. I think this is probably the Pia, maybe the Pia. There aren't a lot of Pias around that joined Awakening Together today. And if so, then this is the second time today I've had the pleasure of making your acquaintance. It's nice meeting you. Okay, so before we look at 495A in my journal, I'm going to read 495 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. Again, this is an original quote from the Supreme Yoga, Yoga Vasistha. The objective universe is delusion or illusion. It does not disappear except through persistent practice. And if you've been listening to my teachings for long, you know I talk about the loop of experience, or the loop of conditioning, or the seeing and believing loop. I've called it all three. But it's that loop that Barb quoted this morning in her teaching as well. What I think, I see. What I see, I experience. What I experience, I think. And because of that loop, we think we see experience, we think we see experience, we think we see experience. And then it's conditioning, it's a habitual loop. Because of that loop, it takes some kind of practice or willingness in order to just get out of the habit of seeing the way we've always seen and thinking the way we've always thought and experiencing the way we've always experienced. So again, 495 from Yoga Vasistha says, the objective universe is delusion or illusion. It does not disappear except through persistent practice. So after I contemplated this, it looks like I actually wrote a few things. The very first one is 495A. So let's look at 495A first. Realizations themselves may seem to bring additional sense of freedom, but realizations are not reality. Realizations do not occur in reality. Realizations occur within the house of mind. Even though they seem to dismantle the house, they are within. So again, if we remember the simple, simple rule, that reality is changeless, right? Reality is absolutely changeless. Well, then when you or I have a sudden realization that even seems to be a bit of an awakening, you know, a shift, that realization, by the definition of reality, cannot be reality because it's a change. I suddenly see different or think different than I did a moment ago because of a sudden realization. The realization is freeing. It brings an additional sense of freedom. But it cannot be the pure liberation of awakening. Because the pure liberation of awakening has no change in it. Which is something the mind can't imagine, because it seems like that I have to change or you have to change in order to realize it. But what I would have to assume from this is that once it's realized, what is also realized is there has never been a change from it, right? So these realizations that we have that appear to be awakening us are actually still happening, of course, within illusion. And what's really interesting, of course, if you're a student of A Course in Miracles talks about true perception or the real world. But it does say that the real world is still a dream. So as we're having these realizations, these awakenings, as the false self seems to be disappearing, all of that is still illusion. That's all happening in illusion. However, the interesting thing is, it is an illusion that dismantles illusion, or an illusion that undoes illusion. And again, this is not anything different than A Course in Miracles says. When A Course in Miracles talks about forgiveness, if you look at the clarification of terms, it says that forgiveness is an illusion. So awakening itself is an illusion, because reality has never changed. However, the fact that it's an illusion is not a reason to resist it, right? We still want to go through that dismantling process. We still want to go through that awakening process. But it may be helpful to realize this is still a part of the dream. Because then we don't lose sight of the difference between what is real and what is not real. And it seems like keeping the realization that reality never changes in mind is most helpful. One moment. I think Jamie wants to go outside.
Want to go outside, my love?
Why don't we go ahead and move on to 495B, which is actually just additional contemplation of the same quote. If you scroll down underneath the comment and reply area, you'll see where you can click on 495B. And I will post that link in the room as well. And I'm just going to read the quote one more time. The quote again was, "The objective universe is delusion or illusion. It does not disappear except through persistent practice." All right, let's look at 495B. "To continue to follow the path of awakening is a wise choice. For as long as there is a path, awakening has not occurred." I have a Facebook group called Awakening Together. And by the way, if there's anybody in the room that would like to be a part of that Facebook group, email me and I will add you. We do have to be Facebook friends first, though, in order for me to add you. But you can make sure you're my friend in Facebook and then message me in Facebook and I'll add you to Awakening Together. But the other day, somebody made a post in Awakening Together of a non-duality teacher teaching that as long as there is apparent choice, it is best to make wise choices. Sometimes what happens when people learn non-dual teachings, well, the ego loves to get involved in everything. And so the ego will get involved in non-dual teachings and basically make idiots out of us. Maybe we've all experienced it in some way. So, the idea that I am awareness, I am changeless awareness, when that's just an intellectual idea rather than a true experience, what happens is people begin to claim that they can't make choices, or more often what they do is they put down other people for making choices. Who is the I that is trying to make this decision? Who is the I that is making that choice? And also what they will do sometimes is they will Well, what they won't do actually is they won't practice discernment. Like most of us that were raised in the Course community, we have learned to kind of distinguish between what we call ego and Holy Spirit. And we've learned to do our best to, you know, let the ego go or not listen to the ego or forgive the ego, however you want to say that, while simultaneously doing our best to embrace Spirit and always act and speak from Spirit, so we learn discernment. Sometimes what people will do when they learn the non-dual path, the I am always awareness, is then, you know, they don't practice discernment. So when a lot of anger comes up or a lot of jealousy comes up or anything else, you know, they say they have no choice about that. You know, it just is. This is just what is now. And so this non-dual teacher was addressing that. And he said, as long as, you know, there's the appearance of choice, it is much, much better to make wise choices. This was his teaching. And someone posted this teaching in Awakening Together. Well, 495B is basically saying the same thing. It is absolutely true that the path of awakening is an illusion. It is absolutely true that what we are has never changed. It is absolutely true that there is no ego. The ego is fully an illusion. All of these things are absolutely true. However, as long as there is an experience of a world, an experience of a personality, an experience of a right mind and a wrong mind, the best thing to do is to continue the practice of disregarding the wrong mind in an honest way and embracing the right mind. That's the wise choice. It doesn't make sense if you try to think about it. You know, because if the entire awakening path is an illusion, why do all this? I mean, how does it work? I don't know. I only know that this is what wisdom always encourages. So to continue to follow the path of awakening is a wise choice. For as long as there is a path, awakening has not occurred. So sometimes, instead of trying to understand things, it's much more helpful just to accept them. And I don't know that anyone's heart has ever argued this idea. It's only the mind, which of course is the ego. It's only the mind that argues this idea. We all know that it's wise to listen to the right mind and that it's wise to observe and let go of the wrong mind. So if you scroll down underneath 495B, underneath the comment and reply area, you will come to 496. Now, I'll also post that link in the room. And first, I'll read 496 from Yoga Vasistha. Whenever objects are perceived in this world... Oh, sorry, I started wrong. Let me begin again. Whatever objects, not whenever, whatever objects are perceived in this world are the mind only, even as the dream objects are the mind only. And again, whenever Yoga Vasistha refers to dream objects, he's actually talking about the nighttime dream. He talks about this world and the nighttime dream, and he consistently compares them to help us see that they're really the same, that there's not truly a difference between the two. Whatever objects are perceived in this world are the mind only, even as the dream objects are the mind only. And as you know, when you fall asleep and have a nighttime dream, there's an entire world peopled, you know, has trees, sky, you know, all of that exists, so, or appears to exist, but yet it doesn't exist. It's mind only. And of course, he's saying that's true of this world as well. So let's look at 496 in the journal. Okay, so what happened as I contemplated 496 is an inquiry arose, and this is the inquiry. What is mind? Thought, attention, perception, and interpretation. When the world is looked at, can it be looked at without mind? That's a damn good question. Okay, so if we say that mind is thought, attention, perception, and interpretation, all of which are mechanisms of mind. Now, can I see a world without those mechanisms? If I did not have the ability to perceive, you know, those of us who are taught even a little bit about science, we know that the eyes don't actually see. The eyes pick up some kind of signal, and it goes into the brain, and it's interpreted in the brain, and it becomes what appears to be sight. Well, if I did not have that perception aspect of the brain, if you carve that out, would I see a world? We also know that there's some element of interpretation that occurs in the world. You know, if somebody puts something in front of you that you have never seen before and you have no way of understanding what it is, in a way it just does not compute. It doesn't compute. It's like it's a neutral object with no meaning. But after you're taught what that object is and how to use it, now it computes. But it needed that interpretation in order to really make sense and to have a purpose and to be something other than a neutral nothing. So what if we carved out the part of your brain that was able to interpret anything? You couldn't tell the difference between what a tape dispenser was for and what a CD player was for. What if you didn't have attention? Can you even see a tape dispenser if you don't place your attention on it? Attention is an aspect of mind, but what if there was no mental attention? You see, if you did not have mind, you could not perceive a world. It would be impossible. There is a direct relationship between mind and world. Even this world that we think is real. Just like there's a direct relationship between mind and the world that we see in our nighttime dreams. All right, so let's scroll down and click on number 497. Number 497 from the Yoga Vasistha is a little longer. This is what it says. In this subtle body, there arise the thoughts or concepts of physical bodies and their component parts. Concepts of birth, activity, etc. Concepts of time, space, sequence, etc. As also concepts of old age, death, virtue and defect, knowledge, etc. Having conjured up these concepts, the subtle body itself experiences the objective universe, composed of the five elements as if it existed in reality. But all this is surely illusory, like dream objects and dream experiences. So when he's referring to the subtle body, he's not referring to the physical body. He's more referring to the mind that thinks it's a self. He's referring to the eye. The eye as a subtle body, because there's already a seeming identity or person there, right? So it has a subtle body. And he says, within this subtle body, all of these concepts arise. And then because those concepts have arisen and were given attention, then there's the appearance, the outward appearance, that they exist. And we know that as projection. So that's not a new idea to us. Let's look at number 497 in the journal. The ideas of the world exist first in metaphysical mind and then appear as the world. The human brain a part of the projection appears to learn from what it sees and experiences in the world. The world appears to be in the first position and the learner in the second. But the I, projected onto the brain as me, is before the world. Beingness exists before the primordial idea and before creation. Beingness is first position prior to apparent cause. Now here the I and beingness are not the same thing. The I would be synonymous with metaphysical mind, a seeming existence as a self. Beingness precedes the seeming existence as a self. So the primordial idea, or the tiny mat idea as it's stated in the Course, would be the birth of, or the beginning of, a seeming existence as a self. So that's the first thing that occurred, was the seeming existence as a self. And then that seeming existence had all of these other concepts arise, gave attention to them. They appeared to be projected outward, although they're not truly outward because they're within the mind, like a dream is within the mind. But they seem to be come into being, and that's apparent creation. But it's all apparent other than real, because the first idea, the idea of an I, is nothing but a thought. It's an untrue idea. As we know, the changeless remains changeless. So again, this is just another way of saying what many of the last journal entries have said. Everything from the primordial idea and beyond is not true. And again, this is where we sometimes get confused, because there are things that we think are true, like our awakening experience, reincarnation. Some people believe in a heaven, after death experiences. You know, we hear about people who died and came back, and we hear about their experience, and we think, oh, that's true. But all of that follows the primordial idea, or the tiny mat idea. Any idea of a self that exists is not true. And anything that happens to that self, whether it's dying and having an experience and then coming back, or whether it's reincarnation, or whether it's being abducted by aliens, or whether it's just getting up from your chair and going upstairs and having dinner, they're all equally illusory. But beingness, or isness, is real. That's real. That precedes the idea of existence as a self. So let's scroll down and click on number 498. There are people upstairs cooking dinner for me now. I can hear them. We're having chicken parmesan tonight. And I think they bought wine. We're celebrating, of course, the ordination that happened this afternoon. Number 498, Yoga Vasistha. When there is the notion of reality in unreal phenomena, there is bondage. So here's where the problem comes in. Again, you know, I think sometimes many of us who have learned from A Course in Miracles, maybe because of the wording tiny mad idea and because of what we project onto the word mad, somehow we project onto the word mad bad. It doesn't say tiny bad idea. It says tiny mad idea, which means, you know, it was crazy. It wasn't true. But we read tiny mad idea and our brain thinks tiny bad idea. And so then we get this idea, at least for some period of time, that there's something wrong with experiencing myself as a person. There's something wrong with experiencing this world, and I'm bad because I have this experience. And then everything is all mucked up in our minds. It's not true that it's bad. That's just our minds making that up and adding that judgment to it. It's not true that it's bad and that, you know, we're bad because of it. Not even believing it makes us guilty. Not even believing it makes us guilty. However, there is a problem that we don't want to deny. And the problem is, if we believe it, we suffer. And remember, the Course also teaches us God's will for me is perfect happiness. Well, guess what? My will for me is perfect happiness. In fact, there's no difference between God's will and my will. They're actually the same. Will is perfect happiness, we could just say. We could take God and me out of it. Will is perfect happiness. And so what happens is we don't have that natural experience, which is our will and our inheritance, if you want to use Course language. We don't have that experience of happiness if we believe in the world experience. Because when we believe in the world experience and we're attached to what happens and we think that this should happen and this should not happen and all of that goes on, then we can't have perfect happiness. We may have some experience of happiness, but we can't have perfect happiness. There's always going to be suffering. So it's not bad in that we're guilty, but it is mad in that if we believe it, we take ourselves into a state of suffering which is unnecessary. So as Yoga Vasistha says, when there is the notion of reality in unreal phenomena, there is bondage. So it's not even the unreal phenomena itself that causes the bondage or the suffering. It's the belief in the unreal phenomena. Which is why true perception allows happiness. True perception still sees unreal phenomena, but it doesn't believe it anymore. And so in true perception or in the real world, there's happiness, not because the phenomena itself has changed, but because the belief in it is gone. So let's look at number 498 in the journal. Belief, I am this, and the world is real, is the cause of all suffering. That's it. That's as simple as it gets. Remember again, A Course in Miracles says nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Herein lies the peace of God. Well, the opposite of that is believing that the unreal exists, believing that I am the unreal, is the cause of all suffering. Right? But it's all just belief. Belief, I am this, and the world is real, is the cause of all suffering. Even the experience of I am this and the world is real could be present without belief, and there's no suffering. That's true perception. So let's scroll down and click on number 499. I am getting hungry. I can feel hunger. So that chicken parmesan should be quite good when I get up there. Yeah, they're making chicken parmesan for me because it's one of my very, very favorite meals. So, and this is Jasmine and Danielle doing the cooking. It's their first time, so I think they're a little nervous about it. Number 499 from Yoga Vasistha says, something which is unreal does not arise in the real. Something which is unreal does not arise in the real. All right, let's look at number 499 in my journal. I went a little longer on this. In fact, it looks like, again, as I contemplated this particular quote, an inquiry arose. the first question, which I didn't write down an answer to. In fact, it looks like I didn't write down an answer to any of these questions, so we can each answer the questions within ourselves. Does a dream, meaning of course a nighttime dream, does a dream really happen, or does it only appear to happen? If I am not this body, this personality, or this mind, but I am I, which is just a Ramana Maharshi symbol, before mind, which means the beingness before the tiny mat idea. I am I before mind, personality, and body. Am I affected by world? And maybe you can just look at this and see what answer arises in you. If I am not this body, this personality, or this mind, but I am I before mind, personality, and body, am I affected by world? Do changes in body affect I, right? Before mind, before the existence or the seeming existence of a self. That isness, that pure beingness that is even before the idea of a self. Do changes in body affect it? Do changes in person or personality affect I? Do changes in mind affect I? Now again, these questions may be very difficult to answer if you have no sense at all of the awareness that's always present. But I think most of us now do have some sense of that. This is something we've been looking at for some time now, and we have some sense of the awareness that is always present. And you know that even in this lifetime, that awareness has been the same. Again, as you were 5 and 15 and 25 and 35 and 45, there were a lot of apparent changes in body and mind. You could have been a Republican at one point in your life, a Democrat at another point in your life, or a Catholic at one point in your life, and A Course in Miracles student at another point in your life, or, you know, married at one point in your life, divorced at another point in your life, right? All these changes occurred, and the way you looked at the world and the way you thought about yourself and the world changed. But this awareness has never been affected. Awareness stays exactly the same. It remains aware, right? And awareness, this awareness that we're aware of as humans, is actually only a light shadow of our true beingness. So if even that never changes, and we can see that, but then you can almost begin to imagine how your true self certainly is not affected. Never affected by changes in body, person or personality or mind. It couldn't come anywhere near touching it or affecting it at all. If nothing affects I, and I is always the same, does the world really happen, or does it only appear to happen? So if we go back to the very first question in this inquiry, does a dream really happen or does it only appear to happen? If you're in a dream and you're being chased by something that scares you, maybe you can't quite see it, but you're being chased by something that scares you, and you're running and you're running and you're running, and then you wake up, you know that there was no real danger. You were just in bed. Your heart may be beating because you were believing it in your dream. You might, maybe depending on who you are, you might even feel some perspiration. But nothing happened, and you know that. It only appeared, but it never happened. There was never a moment of danger. because you were not truly affected in any way. You were just in bed asleep. So if we take that same symbol with any type of realization that the real self is never affected, even by noticing that our awareness is never affected, with the awareness only being a glimmer of our reality. Well, does the world really happen? Or does it only appear to happen? If it has no effect, can it be said to happen? That's the question. I'll just leave you with the question. And we'll go on to number 500. Number 500 by Yoga Vasistha says, there is no illusion in the infinite. That's the end of the quote. Very short. There is no illusion in the infinite. So let's look at my journal and see what I wrote after contemplating that. Oops, I hear dishes falling. Illusion exists in mind as the house of mind. There is no illusion before mind. There is no illusion without mind. Now, the house of mind is just a symbol that's been used in this particular personal journal. The house of mind is the fantasy ideas that appear as reality following the tiny mat idea. That's the house of mind. So illusion exists in mind as the house of mind. There is no illusion before mind, or this could even say before the primordial idea, because the primordial idea or the tiny mat idea is the beginning of existence as a self, and that is synonymous with mind. There's no illusion before existence as a self. There's no illusion without existence as a self. Existence as a self or mind is required to perceive illusion. And if you take away that initial idea, everything else falls down. Again, it's like the symbol of a tree. When I first started learning forgiveness with A Course in Miracles, I used to forgive specific instances. You know, like if just now I'd heard those dishes fall and I'd had some attachment to my dishes, I really liked my dishes. You know, I liked what my dishes said about me, who I am. Right? And there was a panic. Oh, no, you know, maybe they broke a dish that I really love. What I would do is I would look at that panic, you know, and I would notice the thoughts around it. I would notice the attachment. I would, you know, notice all of that. And I would practice letting that go. And I would forgive that instance. But whatever core thought was really behind that, again, the idea, believe it or not, the idea that maybe I am unworthy, and then putting on top of that idea, I am unworthy, a mask of the right dishes and the right home and the right decor, which now makes me worthy, right? If I didn't take the time to look at the core idea and have the core idea healed, well then another thing's just going to show up someday. Those are like forgiving leaves on a tree. When I forgive the situation about the dishes, it's like tearing a leaf off of a tree. But first of all, there's many more leaves on the tree and the leaves are just going to grow back. So I don't really get anywhere. When I started learning to go deeper with forgiveness, which was instead of forgiving the current event, I learned to really look at the core belief. And I began to notice that core belief was underneath many, many events. And I began to give willingness for the core belief to be healed, which also means I began to give willingness not to believe that core belief anymore. Then when the core belief was no longer believed, that was like chopping a branch off of the tree. That branch and all of the leaves go with it. Never again will I be affected by the belief in unworthiness because I don't believe it. And I had many experiences like that, like no longer believing in betrayal and no longer believing in rejection, et cetera, et cetera. And I cut many, many branches off the tree, but there's still other branches on the tree. So at some point, it dawns on us that instead of looking for all of these core beliefs, now we're ready to look for the primordial idea itself. And if we can find the primordial idea itself and give willingness to not believe the primordial idea, just as we gave willingness not to believe those other ideas, we can actually cut the tree down at the level of trunk. And when you cut the tree down at the level of trunk, there is no more tree. So what we're talking about here is giving willingness to let go of the belief that I am existence as a self. In Advaita, you'll hear them call that the I thought. But it's really a belief. And in Course in Miracles community, we call it the thought of separation. But it's a belief. I am existence as a self. The existence part is true. Even better than I am existence, to say existence is. That's the best statement of truth that comes out of that. But when you add the I am existence as a self, you now have a belief. And that's the primordial idea. And that is where all illusion comes from. If you take away that belief, it's like cutting the tree down at the trunk. And there will be no other beliefs, because all other beliefs come out of that. Therefore, there can be no suffering. There can be no illusion, right? So illusion exists in mind as the house of mind. There is no illusion before mind or before that primordial idea. There is no illusion without mind, or there is no illusion without the primordial idea, or there is no illusion without the idea, I am existence as a self. So that's number 500, and obviously there's not time to move on to 501, and as I mentioned, I am hungry, and they are cooking chicken parmesan. So I think it's a good time just to close for tonight. As I said, I will not be here next Sunday or the Sunday after because I will be in Israel, so I will be back on March 17th. I will be here this Thursday with Lynn, but then after this Thursday, I will not be back in Pal Talk until March 17th. So I will see you all then. Thank you, Lisa. And thank you, Christian, and everyone else. Yeah, it will not be so hot this trip, but hopefully warm enough for walking the Jesus Trail, because we will be walking for 4 days. We'll see what the weather is like. All right. Good night, everyone.